Hello and welcome to today's workshop, which is called Foundations of Energy Work. And the idea of this workshop is to cover a lot of points, not so much in theory, but through practical use, and allow for anyone to give a good overview of the landscape of what's needed to be able to work effectively with any form of energy work or medicine journeys or anything where we work on this more subtle and abstract new vast areas of energy. So we have some people in the audience. We'll take some questions after we've covered everything. But first of all, we will speed through the foundations of energy work here. Of course, there will be some things that might be missing that you feel are missing, but we would really like your feedback on that, on the things that you feel is not in here, because obviously there's so many things that needs to be that can be covered. So we focus today on 12 different areas. But before we move into those 12 different areas, we're gonna wait for the plane to pass, also part of the foundations, but we won't even go into these today because they are so basic. So these basic things, there's so much information out there, and I don't think that most people won't need to put these together. And the first five are food, basically what you need to eat, and the easiest way to eat for stable energy work is a fruit/raw vegan diet, and you can't go wrong. As soon as you start adding in dead animals, then you open up a whole other door of potential problems because you don't know where they come from and whatnot. This is a very quick generalization, but overall this is good. Fruits and veg, they have a high vibration because the food is alive, and that's good for your energy work, more or less. And drink clean water, of course. So health means how's your internal organs doing? Do you have any obvious diseases that you need to take care of? Do you have anything obvious that's going on with your health? Of course, you need to address that. Another one is addiction. If you're drinking or doing a lot of drugs, I mean, that needs to be looked at first. Exercise, make sure that you're moving enough. Of course, there's something you can optimize a lot for your exercise, and there are many different forms of exercise and energy exercise, but you need to be generally moving quite a bit and being healthy. And sleep, that you're able to sleep at least enough hours for you to function. So if you have insomnia or anything like that, then that needs to be taken care of first. But once you feel that those five first steps are more or less in order, then we can move on to these 12 foundations that we picked today. And I will give you the headline of all of them. So first we will cover chi, chakras, and the dantians, social behavior, the internal dialogue, silence, fears, dreams, and the inner child, integration, spirit, and location. So the aim is to cover all of this in under 1 hour. So now we're gonna go quickly here. And it's not so important that you understand all the theory behind it. This is more for an integration on the bodily level. And we'll focus a bit more on practical use than on theoretic understanding. And as we've covered these 12, what will be made possible for you as the listener is to realize what parts do you know well, what parts don't you know much about at all, and what interests you. Pay attention to those three things, because if it's something that you know well and you feel that you know way better than me talking here and the way that I cover it, you probably don't need to know that much more about it. But if something is very new to you and there are new concepts, do your research there, or if you live here in the Chiang Mai region, you can just come and you can write us an email, or you can come see us here in person. And And also if something interests you, it might be an area where you have a lot of potential for learning and expansion. So we want to create a form of blueprint of many different areas that you can focus on. So to have a form of core that we work around, we want to talk about this, since this is called Foundations of Energy Work, and that is called Qi. And Qi obviously comes from Chinese. It's also known as prana or photonic energy. Is one of the newer terms that I've heard that I really like. And this is the life force. This is a lot of the maladies that we have on every level in our body, whether it's physical, social, emotional, spiritual. A lot of it can be derived to not having enough qi, not having enough life force. So if we're struggling a lot, instead of going for the individual problems or issues, by raising the qi up significantly, then a lot of the issues that we have, they fall off by themselves, which is obviously great. But a lot of it has to do with that people in general just struggle with having enough qi or life force, or the prana or the photonic energy. What qi is that, in, for example, the way of life of Lao Tzu, and they talk about the Tao, which is the extended qi. So qi you experience kind of in the body, but the qi is in everything because it's life force. And they say that the Tao that can be named is not the eternal Tao, meaning that you can't explain it with words. It's too vast, it's too complicated, or it's too simple for the use of words. So words can never really cut it. But you can experience it within the body. You can experience it within your life. And when you align yourself with the way that the qi flows and the way that the way of life works and functions in a good way, it feels good, it feels right, and so on. So I believe that most people that do energy work are familiar with qi. Something new now about the qi is that it's also called bioelectromagnetic sensation that you have in the body. So you can feel the Tao, the qi, very strongly in your hands, for example, in your feet. It's very easily accessible. And doing exercises such as Tai Chi or Qigong, or you practice on moving and feeling the qi within your body. And this sensation is something that we really want to work on increasing, so that we feel this all over our body. So that's a quick introduction to the qi. And we want to talk about them brings a few different cultures together. So we will look at the chakras here, which is mainly something that comes from India. And obviously an Indian person's human body is not going to differ much from a Chinese person's body. So it's the same inherent foundations. These foundations that we talk about and mention here, we use them because they are inside every single person. There's no one who does not have qi. You might call it something else, but we're still talking about the same thing. So with the chakras, there are up to 112 or 114 chakras, depending on how you want to count. But here we will focus on the main seven. That there are these energy centers within the body that goes from the root to all the way up to the crown, and they represent different things. We won't go into what each one means, but we have certain spinning energy centers going from the bottom of the root and all the way up to the crown, through heart center and the solar plexus, third eye, throat, and the sacral. So, but the chakras is something that I think that most people are familiar with. And if you're not familiar with the chakras, then you are up in for a treat. But the big thing about the chakras is the difference between feeling versus knowing. So knowing is reading about it, having heard about the chakras. You can rap about chakras all day. But there's a different thing of feeling them inside your own body. And for that, your qi and your awareness needs to go up quite a bit, so that you can experience them firsthand, whether that's in meditation or when you're walking down the street. In meditation, obviously, it's easier because sensory deprivation. But and that they you that you can feel them spinning. That is basically, if you can't do that, then you're kind of missing out. So then you can know you can put more juice into it, and you can experience this, and you can kind of feel it. So you get a personal relationship to your chakra. So it's not hearsay. It's not something that someone told you about. You can feel it within your own body. And so this is obviously mainly from India. And then we have the dantians, which are also energy centers along also along the spine, from China and in the Chinese traditions. And they're often referred to as the elixirs of life. It's good to point out that these are not the chakras, but they are, if the chakras are spinning, like spinning plates, then the dantians are more spheres, and which also feed into the meridian systems. But the main thing, main difference between the dantians and the chakras is what you can do with them. For example, how they that they kind of fit together as three, and you can feel the orbits and the connection between them. But you can also fall behind, like when you're falling into sleep or you're going into deep meditation, you can drop down behind your dantians into the void, into the dark sea of awareness, into a space where it feels almost like going to sleep, but not really. So that's the biggest difference between the chakras and the dantians, in the fact that you have an access point, almost like a wormhole into the dark, silent part of the universe. So it's very practically different, instead of us trying to explain exactly what they are. So, yes. So that's covering chi chakras and dantians quickly on the life force and how the different energy centers work. And we're going to talk about and jump from energy abstract into something very tangible, and that is social behavior. And with social behavior, we're going to look at how that affects the levels of energy in both a positive and a negative way. The thing is that we can act in something in a way that's socially totally acceptable, but it's detrimental to your energies. Your chi just—it's like you just turn the off button on your chi. And the same thing with your—you can do something that is socially totally unacceptable, but really, really good for your chi and your overall energy. So we really want to return to a state where we have a lot of energy, no matter what culture or our times and all the things this say about our behavior, so that we can return to more about what we were and to get our power back, so we can get the whole organism working in a healthy, wholesome, appropriate way. So basically, we don't want to have any kind of social behavior that are primal leaks, that makes us drain energy in a way that weakens us. I'll give you two examples of this. And one, for example, of the social behavior, which is very common, is validation, that we look outside for our sense of worth, that we use the social sphere to determine whether we're doing well or not in life. And basically what we're doing is that we're trying to find our own... Yeah, we validate ourselves by looking outwards and then bringing it in, instead of looking inwards and then seeing how am I doing and then looking at the world. And it's a pretty easy trick where you're basically, you're feeling your body with your eyes and then mirroring that image back out onto the world, instead of going staring out like a fish on what's going on outside of the fishbowl and then bringing that home. And this is one of the most normal things in the world to do, and it's really as a practice to reverse this and remove this validation. But the main thing is to notice that, oh man, I am validating myself from the outside. So if we notice that we're doing that a lot, yeah, that can cause a lot of problems. Another form of social behavior that is also that it kills everything. It ruins us. It ruins others. It's a plague of our times, and that is gossip. That we talk about people that are not there in a way where they can't defend themselves, and this is absolutely detrimental to your chi or your life force. It unroots everything that's wholesome in you when we revert and fall back on this kind of behavior. And a good way to look at it is with three words, and it's honesty, sincerity, and integrity. When we move away from these, what we're really doing is that, it might hear it on a social level, but what's really happening is that it's on an energetic level where we're compromising our energies. And yeah, it's the more we do it, the worse we'll feel. And there's no two ways around that. If someone realizes that and feels that and still want to keep on doing this gossiping, then there's not much need to be said about that, I think. So that's a bit about social behavior. And then we'll move on to something that also connects with both energy and social behavior, and that is the internal dialogue. And the internal dialogue is that the fact of the matter is that if you go into a coffee shop and sit down and look at people walking down the street, you can see that pretty much 99% of them are being driven forward by their mind. You see a body walking that's pulled by a mind in the head. That's a pretty obvious statement. You can probably see it in friends and family and so on. This is the normal state of affairs, and this is how we function. But really what's going on here is that there's a lot of imbalances for most people on the level of the organs. For example, the liver is antagonized, and it sends out a feeling of discomfort throughout the whole body that spreads up through the meridians and up to the eyes, up to the temples, and creates pressure, and then ends in the right frontal cortex. And we experience this as talking, self-talk in the head. And this self-talk in the head, I've been saying for a long time that it's 60, 70, 80% negative or repetitive. I've Googled it again now a couple of years later, and it seems like it's even higher than that. It's up to 90%. So basically, most people have an internal commentator in the head talking in a way that brings hopelessness, doubt, and just overall, nonsense. It's just it's the kind of commentator you would never invite to a party. If there was a friend sitting next to you talking like that, you would just never hang out with them. But the fact that it happens in a kind of an invisible way, and it's a talk inside of our own heads, then we realize me, when it really isn't. This voice can be silenced, and you can learn to practice to stop its influence. And the benefits are monumental. We'll talk about that a little bit later when we come to the silence and the power of silence. But something that's good to know about the internal dialogue is through two of the things that it brings about. So I mentioned very quickly here that the pressure between the temples just behind your eyes inside of your head, if you pretend that should be as soft, as gentle as a turquoise lagoon sea, the most tranquil, soft, and beautiful place. And instead, we have this pressure inside. And this pressure creates two things. And one thing it creates is cognitive dissonance, or mind fog. So basically, we're stuck in the same form of mind mood, or way of looking at the world, which colors things in a way which is way really far away from our higher self or our real potential, or when we're having an awesome day. Like when we're having an awesome day, we're far away from this. And then most other times, this cognitive dissonance that creates like a barrier, we don't see the world in the clear, beautiful, constructive, and wonderful way that it could be. And it's all going on inside of the head. only because we talk to ourselves too much, and this hangs around as a fog or a dissonance. The internal dialogue also brings with it one other thing that makes the world very difficult for us to maneuver, and that's bias. And the way bias works is that if there are many things to choose from, and let's say we have four things to choose from, and there's one of them that's good, we're going to choose the one that we want to be the right thing. Because that's just the way the ego works, that's the way the mind works, it goes with familiarity, and it's like wishful thinking. Yeah, I'm going to quit this thing, and maybe the solution is to do more of it. You know, this is utter and complete bias. And it's hard to catch ourselves in the act of doing this, but knowing that the internal dialogue and talking to ourselves in our own heads makes us validate and choose things that are very, very not good for us through the mechanics of bias. So if you're ever able to catch yourself in the moment while your bias is in action, you have found a gold mine of potential power and energy that you can save in the form of chi, and because you'll be doing your ability to make good decisions just goes off the scale. Yeah, and the effects of the internal dialogue on your chi is also massive. When you talk to yourself negatively, when you're not lifting yourself up, when you're too hard on yourself, when you're not being constructive, it just kills the fire of chi. So when we're talking about to ourselves like that, we're really doing harm. We're really keeping ourselves down. Just think about the way that you talk to yourself. If you kept talking just as much to someone else, they would just fall apart. They would never be able to handle that. And they would never be able to take it, or they would never accept it. But it's us in us, or what we believe is us. So then we kind of accept that. There's also been a lot of studies on water by especially Masaru Emoto, is that his name? On water and water crystals, on when you talk to water, that the crystal changes. So if you keep saying, I love you to water, the crystal changes and become very beautiful, they're well constructed, they're wholesome, and then if it keeps talking negative to it, then they look distorted, contorted, they look ugly and broken. So when you think stuff to yourself, if they're negative, they change the crystalline structure of the water inside of your body. And we're from, I don't know, 60% to 80%, depending on the organ and the part. So this chatter that no one can see other than us just changes everything inside of the body. So that's when we're able to learn to meditate, for example, and gently stop this talk. It is, our body loves it. From like cell to DNA and all the way up to nose, right? It absolutely loves it. So, and when it comes to the internal dialogue and stopping it, there's even more benefit to it. Now, and I'll move on and talk a bit more about silence. And being in a state of silence, it's like imagine that you're a mobile phone. And when you become totally silent, when you turn your mind off and you're only observing presence in the moment, awareness, when it's like you're putting your phone on charge and you're beginning to reboot and reboost yourself, and you're getting all this juice that you need for your life back. That's what silence gives you. But then when the internal dialogue is on, it's not like you're pulling the cord out and you're just missing out. It's like you're pulling the cord out and placing it outside where it's kind of raining on you as a phone, and you're basically breaking down slowly. So you're going from -2 of having an internal dialogue where you're basically fighting against yourself and your environment, and you go to silence and you're +1. So there's a big, big difference. The math says it's 3. But that's more or less what's going on. So it's not a binary on or off. It's it's a massive accomplishment that have huge implications over any extended period of time. And to look at the power of silence, one of the easiest ways is to look at uncomfortable silence. You know, everyone's experienced that, whether that's a dinner party or you're on stage and you're talking in front of people, you're on a date, it's you're in another country and you don't speak the language, and it just goes silent and it just becomes utterly uncomfortable. The fact is that there's no uncomfortable silence. There's the powerful silence and the uncomfortable you. And that is a really big shift, because there's so much energy in silence. That's why people spend their whole life in monasteries and stuff, just not doing anything. Not because they don't like TV, right? It's not because they don't, it's not about that. It's like they're connecting to a source of energy that, and their chi is going up. So it's, there's a lot to say about silence, of course, but so there is a lot of energy to be found there, and a lot of experience to be had within silence. And the other way, the common way of today, which is the internal dialogue, brings with it so much energy loss, confusion, and suffering that, yeah, it's this form of energy work, it really feels like it's on the rise, that the grassroots are growing. So silence, apart from having a lot of power, it also is the only real path for our self-realization. And the reason why it is that is because through silence we can watch ourselves, what's going on. And if we pretend that we're kind of lost our way and we don't really know how to function on the levels of energy with where we're abundant in chi and abundant in prana and abundant in photonic energy and just bustling with life, we need to look at what's going on first and quiet that which is interrupting. And that's why silence is also very practical on an internal level. So when we do start to do this kind of work, what we start to notice is all the stuff that we're not, that we, where we're kind of off track, and those are absolute diamonds in the rough again. You're looking for that, and you're just hoping you never stop finding them, because if you never stop finding them, you're always moving in the right direction. So self-observation and self-awareness, even though it might suck to realize that, oh, I'm not very good here, and oh, I messed that up, and there might be a lot of regret, we still need to wake up to who we are and where we're at, and realize that we're on a journey of return to where our energies are strong, where we kind of have fallen from grace or falling out of harmony with nature. We live in very strange time. Modern society is utterly, utterly odd on the level of energy, and it's a very big challenge to find our way back to what's really healthy and wholesome. So from silence, we'll jump into one of the things that disturb silence the most, apart from the internal dialogue, social behavior and so on, is fears. And it's been said in many shamanic traditions that fear is the first enemy on the road to knowledge, and knowledge being gnosis, or a fundamental understanding of and being able to maneuver in the universe. And so fear is always going to be something that, if we have it, we need to deal with it, and we need to maybe not confront it, but overcome it and be at peace with it. And if someone is struggling a lot with fear, the key is to feel the fear and just do it anyway, and move through it and until it's no longer fear. There'll be other challenges after that, but that's good to know that it's, for since time immemorial, it's been there, it is there, it's connected to internal dialogue, it's connected with social behavior a lot, and yeah, it's there. Now we don't have that many primal fears. Like, most people don't have to worry about being in mortal in situations where they have to fear for their lives, where they're being attacked by tigers or in wars or whatnot. Of course, that's happening, but if you're there, then you need to get out of there. There's no two ways about that. But what happens on a social level that is equally, not equally, but definitely totally detrimental on the levels of energy, but in a devious way where we can't see it, because if we have an external threat that is very obvious, then we know what to kind of, we realize what we're supposed to do about it. But fear comes on the in the modern society as preoccupations. And preoccupations means that we are worrying about small things that don't really, we don't have a solution for them, or we don't know what to do about them, or we're not doing something about it. The preoccupations, just in general, and realizing that we all, most of us, we all have them, and we need to be very aware of what these preoccupations are. So if you don't know your top three preoccupations, meaning that what do you spend most of your time thinking about in a negative way using the internal dialogue, if you don't know that, you need to bring up your self-awareness, pay more attention, bring more silence, and know that, okay, so 1 hour a day I'm thinking about X, 45 minutes about Y, and 30 minutes about Z in total. And they're all negative, they're changing my crystalline structure, they're killing my chi, and realize that they are only common, they're not normal. The difference is that it's what's common, it's what most people are doing. It doesn't mean that it's normal in any shape or form. So, and another thing that comes with fear is obviously denial. Not only a river in Egypt, also something that we do a lot. When we just, the denial, denial of what we need to do, denial of what we're doing. I don't think that one needs to be talked about so much. That's each to their own. It's very easy to see in others. It's extremely hard to see in yourself. And it's an issue we all share, where the worst thing you can do about it is place judgment on another. Or that saying, why point out the splinter in your brother's eye when you miss the plank in your own, or something like that. This is a very funny quote. So that's going on with fears. Okay, so from fears we're going to bridge over to something much more abstract, and maybe something that won't, maybe this is just my bias and assumption, but maybe won't speak to everyone, but for the people that struggle with this, I think it will be important, and that's dreams. And I'm not talking about sleep that we've talked about before. This is dreaming in particular, and there are many dream practices, from lucid dreaming and dream interpretation and into some forms astral projection, to where you're walking into this another level of attention. So there are many theories about what the dreams are and the way you can use them and so on. But what most people don't realize, especially people that do lucid dreaming, is that photonic energy that we also talked connects to the chi, or is another word for chi, which emanates from the heart center, the heart chakra, is the part of us that we use to be able to power up our dreams, especially lucid dreaming. When we're in lucid dreaming, we are using the energy from our heart center to power up the photonic eye, the third eye, to be able to travel and see in this space. And eventually we run out of this and we come back out of the dream and we wake up. Maybe we don't wake up right away, but we're eventually coming back. So we can't do it indefinitely, and it's not because the body will wake up, it's because we don't have enough photonic energy to sustain the lucid dream or the astral projection or even normal dreams that we're in, even though that might not take as much of this energy. But what's really happening, if you look at the dream space and your primal self. So you have two selves in the waking world. One is the primal self, that's the energy, and then we have the social self, which is not necessarily thinking so much about the energy, but they're doing a lot of social things. The social self is what walks out into this dream space. So when the movie that you see in and around the dream space,
correlates really well who you are on the social level, creating a very strange form of loop where you're validating your social self foregoing your primal self, more or less. It strengthens the identification of who you are. And if that's not the way we're supposed to maneuver here, then you know, then you can see that you're stuck very, very strongly into this loop. If you're doing active lucid dreaming, you don't have the prana or the photonic energy and the chi needed to really power yourself up here in the waking world. Maybe you're not enjoying the waking world so much, so you travel out and in some form of escapism. So knowing that that's what's going, that is something that is going on and dynamic within the dream space, and that there is also, it's almost like going to the cinema where you are catered to for what you're seeing and you're paying with your photonic energy. And we, many people feel very powerful, and there's a lot of knowledge and things that we feel that we can find there. However, at the end of our life, then when we really need this energy, we don't have it for the next incarnate, for the next for traveling on to our next the next destination of our journey. So that might sound a little bit strange, but that's a good thing to think about, and for the people that do this kind of practice, it probably hits home quite a bit. If you want to know more about this, there's certainly a lot of good stuff you can read about what's going on there. So when one has, if one is working a lot with dreams, it's good to realize that dreams correlate really, really well to the internal dialogue. So the way that you talk to yourself about your life in your waking world will correlate very well what's going on in your dreams. So, and there can even be that you talk to yourself so much during the day and you go to sleep, so when you wake up, the dialogue has not stopped, even though you were basically supposed to be offline during the night. So there's a continuous 24/7 dialogue going on, even though you are asleep. And a way to work on this is to get up very early in the middle of the night, between 2, 3, 4 a.m. when you're still very tired. Go up, meditate, perhaps read really close and stop the internal dialogue so you're quiet, and then go back to sleep. So you can get into these deeper delta states and so on, getting a lot of rest and recovery in a way that you are not able to access if you're talking too much during the day. So from the strange realm of dreams, we're going to talk a bit about the inner child. Child is something that's turning to something of a hot topic in the energy world, and people talk about connecting to your inner child and healing your inner child and working within your child, and there are many different forms of therapies and hypnosis and so on to access this. But the first thing to know, if you don't have much experience with working with the inner child, or even if you do have experience with the inner child for that matter, is that it's good to know that the inner child is comprised of a yin and yang balance. So all inner children have a balance between the yin and the yang, which is an expression of your yin and the yang. And this balance is very highly influenced by your perception of the relationship between your parents. So the relationship between your parents, or the way you perceive that relationship to be, is going to be heavily influenced how the yin and yang side of your inner child is able to communicate and relate. So when you think about your parents, for example, and also to a large degree about your grandparents on your mother's side, the grandparents on your father's side, and you can keep walking up this family tree, and you can easily see that there's a certain form of emotion or a certain form of emotional heritage that comes from each side of the family, funneled through your parents and then into you. And if you know the relationship between your grandparents and so on, you can almost pinpoint what the emotion is in each of them and how it's been handed down to you, like a obviously sometimes a not so nice gift so that easily becomes a part of us that is so normal to us that we can't, it's hard to even feel that it's going on inside of us. So if you have an image between your parents, what's the first image that comes up? That will tell you a lot about what's going on your, with your inner child. So, and from there on, it's good to know, where does your inner child live? Is it left ankle? Like, is it right ear? Is it left eye? Now, that inner child is stationed within your heart center. And when the inner child is happy and loving and cared for, you get a very buoyant feeling that is able to carry a lot of the rest of the energies from the that's inherent within your energetic structure. And if the inner child is feeling suppressed or cloaked or pushed down, then we get this suffocating feeling, and it's not as easy to feel this joy and to really have the magical explosive power that only the inner child can bring. Because if you realized you had a magical world of where anything was possible, we probably wouldn't send our adult self in there because we have no imagination. We just send the child in, of course, because they can, yeah, they're more equipped for a world without boundaries, which is pretty funny. So that's a little bit about the inner child and how it connects and the photonic energy. And also, the inner child is very connected to the sexual center. So the sexual center is a base, and that's why the root and the sacral chakra are so important to work on, because that's really the energy that sustains the inner child through innocence and having it in a balanced, healthy way. So you can see what kind of behavior is probably on the worst end, even from being utterly celibate on one side to being completely open and no restrictions on the other. There's very little balance in each, so the problem, what we're meeting is probably in a very beautiful unity somewhere in the middle. And that's rare these days, I think. So from the inner child so when we're working on all of these things and trying to put it all together, what is a catchphrase that really highlights for us to are able to embody this? And that is one thing that we like here is integration. And there's a quote saying that the ability to integrate determines vitality. And that is a very good quote, because our ability to embody, not cognitively understand, all the things that we're doing in and around energy work, that is key. That is very, very clutch. A hinge point. And by vitality, it means joyful alertness, to be on point, to have more energy every day, like the opposite of Alzheimer's or old timers. Like we're old, but we're young, right? And we want to learn, we have an appetite for life. That's all vitality. And as part of integration, it's good to see that stable communities with many generations under the same roof and a tradition of a way of functioning and working are usually quite good at integration, because you can get easy feedback on what's going on with you in comparison to an already functional structure. So, and the integration also makes it so that if you've had, for example, been very far out and had very strong experiences, and you want to integrate this into yourself to be of service to your community, is a massive gift, not for them because they get you to do it. That's fantastic. But on the level of integration for you as an individual to be useful in a community environment will multiply and really explode the positivity. So let's say you got a nugget of gold from somewhere and you don't really know how to integrate it in yourself, and you go with this nugget of gold inside of you, and you become and do community service. I don't mean maybe as a modest society means, but if you have a community and you make yourself so that you're of service to that community, then you putting yourself in a situation where you are that useful will multiply that nugget exponentially, depending on how much juice you're able to put into it and how well you're able to be of service. So, and there's another quote that's very good about usefulness. Usefulness is the closest thing to godliness or goddessness. And to be in that position is really, really a privileged position where you're giving and receiving at the same time. You make it possible for, you're basically circumventing short-term gratification and you get gratefulness back instead. Gratefulness and love, because you realize how integration works and the way that you can be useful in your environment. And these form of gestures connect really, really well with spirit. We talked about in one of the first podcasts, or in the first podcast, about spirit and what spirit is. And when we have a lot of spirit, whatever, however everyone, anyone wants to define that, our motivation and our creativity is very, very high. That's a good indication that our connection to spirit is strong, the spirit of humankind. And the spirit, our clarity and our ability to connect with spirit has a lot to do with our intentions and our purpose. And this is something that we can't really circumvent, because if our intentions and our purpose is not really wholesome, our heart and our inner child witnesses everything that we do. So we're basically hurting ourselves on a very deep level when we are not clear with our intentions and purpose. That being said, for anyone that, when we start to look at this, it's good to know that if we're doing, feel that we're doing pretty good, or at least we're maintaining, then the cleaning our intentions and purpose would only bring good feeling and wholesomeness and so on and joy to our hearts by being able to clean and align it. And the spirit is definitely also connected to the soul aspect of us. For anyone who has past life experiences or reincarnation and multidimensional things going on, the soul is obviously a tricky word, but I saw a great video a couple of days ago about the soul coming into the body between first couple of weeks or a month or two after we're born, and that we enter into this incarnate in a state where we don't have any senses, we don't have any memories, we don't have any experiences yet. But the sense of being a soul is still very strong, meaning that if we want to get back to the spirit connection of reconnecting to who we are without any of this lifetime's imprints, which can be sound like a pretty strange thing, I get that. That means on a practical level that we have to connect to our soul level, not through our senses, not through touch, like not to feel, not with our eyes, and not with memory, and with a silent, invisible connection, which is more on the level of intentions and purpose and silence. And that's how we can reconnect to that and get a whiff of what that might be. And then, of course, in altered states of many different kinds, we can also get other kinds of perspectives on this. The reason why I bring it up now when we talk about it now is that it's a very, very interesting perspective. We don't need to dive into it much more than that. But certainly, spirit and soul seem to go hand in hand. So we've covered 11 out of the 12, and this one will be for all the locals. So the last one is location. And location means that if you're going to do energy work, you have to be in a good location. We mentioned war zones before. That is a bad location to be in if you're doing energy work without any, without putting anyone down of where. So the reason why location is so important is that we have to look at the state of affairs of what's going on the planet today. And we can, I think everyone with any form of sense can see that something's going on and things are just not really right. And there are wars, there are large corporations, there are countries that are messed up, and pollution and so on. Without going into any of the doomsday and looking at what's coming, is that it's far from the Garden of Eden, that's for sure. And so by location means that you have to be very, very smart about where you position yourself on the planet. And luckily for us, I'll say, and I say luckily, we've found Chiang Mai. And Chiang Mai is a yin vortex. By that, it's nothing. You can be very new age about it, and you can be very IKEA scientific about it. So fact of the matter is that Thailand has not had much war or conflict, and it's been peace country without much shed blood over the centuries. And there is, of course, a lot of the culture of Buddhism, or the religion of Buddhism, is very strong with a lot of temples, especially here in Chiang Mai. Within the old city alone, I don't even know how many temples there are, but there's one, feels like there's one on every street corner, which brings a certain form of kind benevolence that is also apparent in the people. Of course, maybe this is changing a bit because there's so many tourists here in Chiang Mai, but still they're handling it really, really well compared to, for example, the south of Thailand, which is way more wild, wild west and more deserted island, anything goes kind of mentality. So being in this location, and everyone who's moved from anywhere living in Chiang Mai knows that the conscious community and the amount of healers and the amount of yoga and the amount of strange modalities that come through these parts of the world is really, really massive. If there's any other place in Asia, and maybe you can talk about certain parts of Indonesia and Bali, but there's nothing like Chiang Mai when it comes to this. And I think that people that come here realize that. And so we're in this yin healing part of the world where everything is aligning for a larger form of change. If you look at Asia and in general. So positioning yourself in Chiang Mai is more or less optimal. There are so many different places where you can choose to live in the city, outside of the city. You can live up in Pai or in Changda or Chiang Rai, close to here. But this area of the world is for healing, and it's stable, even though there's a... come to the last point of the whole thing, which is also connected to location. And why is Chiang Mai such a good place to be in? It's because returning to our hearts and the heart connection and the chi and the photonic energy and recultivating and restabilizing ourselves will be the biggest challenge, will be to reconnect to our heart center and realize that the path of spirit, or the path of your heart path, is to reconnection with the part the path of an empath. Your empathic, intuitive connection with other people, your ability to see yourself in others and realize that we are one heart, and realize and feel what's going on within another, and returning to something that at a very young age, you could not conceive of not being able to have this connection. And then, and we've lost it because of our loss of chi, because the chakras are not working. We have no connection to our dantians, to the void and the silence. The internal dialogue has taken over. Our social behavior is utterly strange. Little honesty, little sincerity, little integrity. Fears are suffocating us, and dreams are making things very confusing or makes us too sure about this or that. The inner child has been lost and forgotten. Integration is a new word that we haven't really heard of before. The spirit is, the connection to spirit is dusty. The connection is dusty at best, and our location is rarely where it should be. So, and not to forget the first five things of food, health, addiction, exercise, and sleep. But when you put all of this together, have a look and see if there's any real sore things where you go like, oh my God, this one I need to take care of. Or, oh my God, I know this one pretty well. So don't use this one to bring yourself down. Find your strong points, anchor yourself in that, add one or two things and make those your strength. But if there's anything that you're struggling with here, those are your potential future positions of strength and power and happiness in your life. These are either already diamonds or diamonds in the rough for you. And I think that with an overview of this, it make it a little bit easier for us to maneuver. Yeah, that's, I think that's it. How much time is that?
That's about an hour.
Aye, 5 minutes. I wasn't sure if we were gonna make it. So, yeah, this is, well, maybe I should throw out the question. Is there anything that you feel is obviously missing in these foundations? Is there something that you feel like, okay, I like this, but I would also add something?
Don't know if it's missing, but I'm thinking, yeah, we talked about gossip, right?
Mm.
I mean, part being probably choosing your environment, social environment, so you don't wind up in it. And I'm thinking of the analogy of a smoker. The one that does most harm is not the one that smokes, it's the one that doesn't smoke, but it's like a bystander or collateral. So how would you word yourself if you're in an area that has a lot of gossip or in an environment?
Yeah, the first thing is that on the level of your honesty, sincerity, and your integrity is that you can make a stand and say right away that I don't do this, I don't like it, I don't. But that might have ramifications of the people not really going to hang out with you, or they might start gossiping about you. But if that's what's happening in your environment, you have to remove yourself from that. The more you, it's like drinking a glass of water with a little bit of poison in it. The more you drink, the worse it'll get. It really is something that's, it's a real, real conundrum, a real, real challenge, and it's hard and painful and difficult, yeah.
And I was also thinking bias and cognitive dissonance. Understand the aspect of it is just, you're like another word, or how can you?
That you're partial towards something that you like or that you wish to be true. And you, if you are presented with different options, you're going to go for the one that you want to be true.
Mm.
So that's the way that bias works. That we, it's a little bit part denial, but it's difficult because it's the way our intellect is constructed, and the way for us to reasonably choose options. So it's built in as a problem there. So basically you could say that the real solution to bias is to drop down to your heart center and go by feeling. So when you do that, then you circumvent and you don't use the mechanics of mind. So you're not pushing your awareness up and through the thinking mind so much as falling down and going by feeling. Because when you do that, your answers come so apparent, become very apparent to you what's nice and feels right. Yeah. Cognitive dissonance, you can see it as the residue of of we had Baba here did fasting for a couple of days, maybe a week or so,
mm-hmm.
if that's right.
Yes.
Yeah, you mentioned afterwards that wow, I feel so incredibly clear after having done this fast. We talked about it and we came. I think we realized that it was this mind fog fell away. Of course, maybe you did a lot of meditation and so on too, but just cleaning everything up and being in a quiet environment, it took away this after effect, this after vibration that just, it brings so much more clarity to our senses, so much clarity to the connection with ourselves. It's like you're in the desert and then there's a sandstorm. The sandstorm is basically the cognitive dissonance that you stirred with self-talk. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, gossip is difficult. So is the internal dialogue, for sure.
And I read a lot about chakras, and chakras is really out there, and I guess Dantians is also out there if you're doing TCM or working more with the Qigong, Tai Chi kind of philosophies. But a lot of the things, different cultures are talking about the same thing, but as I got it, the Dantians and the chakras are
vastly
different.
Yeah, from all the stuff that I've been able to read and the experience within myself, they are not the same thing. They have different use, where the chakras are more like a spinning vortex, and the Dantian is more like a black hole.
Mm-hmm.
You could say like that, where dark matter enters and comes in through you, yeah.
Portals
in your body more, and then they power up the chakras and the meridian system.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's very cool, and I really want to maybe mention this only very briefly, is the void, and the void or dark matter or so on that we can enter into by falling behind the heart center, the middle Dantian, and we can, as strange as it sounds, travel on the wings of our perception and our sensation and our awareness into something where we're there, but we're not there at the same time. Very strange experience, but it's a connection back to a lost silent side that we so desperately need, because it's a power source that we're supposed to be able to have experiences in there. Yeah, so anything else that...
The only thing I thought was missing was the thing you covered in the absolute end, and that was the heart connection.
Okay.
The
heart connection kind of seeps in through all of this, because the heart is, it's the photonic energies it powers up everything that we do. I mean, the other chakras, of course, are very important, and luckily we don't have to choose or expose or throw any one of them out. But the lower regions are more the levels of the beast, and then up here. So basically, if you're too much in the lower chakras, you become too much like a beast. If you're too much up on the higher chakras, then you become just spiritually blinky blonky. you're too fairy, you're too out there, you're too new age, there's nothing practical, it's all bliss and whatnot. It's too much up there. So the thing that centers us in the middle of all this is the heart center, because it connects us to everyone else. In the other two, if there's too dominated, it's just me, myself, and me, and I, you know.
I think maybe the heart connection could have its own. It feels like it's very, very important.
Okay.
Yeah.
That just became very clear. It's nice when you make up 12 things and they realize that you missed the most obvious one. Okay, great.
Yeah,
yeah, see, that shows me where I need to do my work. Funny. All right. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Lovely.